This is an interview with Edward G. Manning for the Youngstown State University Oral History Program, Youngstown Telegram Project by Jeffrey Scott Sahonic. This interview is being conducted at Mr. Manning's home at 1440 Kensington Avenue, Youngstown, Ohio, at 10:30 a.m. Mr. Manning, tell us something about your background, your education, your family, when and where you were born.
Well, I was born in Youngstown, Ohio, March 20th, 1913. Born and raised here, raised on the north side, attended St. Edward's, McKinley, Hayes, and Rand School, where I graduated in 1933.
Can you tell us something about your family?
Well, my parents were born in Ireland, and they came here at the turn of the century. And my father worked for the Valley Mill, which at that time was owned by the Wick brothers. Then later he went to when the sheet and tube was built, he went to work in the Puddle Mill at the sheet and tube, Youngstown Sheet and Tube. Then later he worked in the Puddle Mill at the A.M. Byers in Girard, Ohio. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Oh, yes. There's five of us all together. My brother Bill is a vice president. Of the Southern California Safe Company. He's vice president in charge of sales. His company is located in California, mm-hmm. Montebello, California. And he's 2 years younger than I am. Then I have another sister living in California, the youngest one. And I'm residing now with my sister Helen. And I have another brother, John Manning, who's residing here in Youngstown at 462 Alameda Avenue. And that's the extent of the family. Of course, the parents are deceased.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Manning, describe your neighborhood where you grew up. Was it the ethnic makeup of it? What type of activities you took part in?
Well, this neighborhood would be called, at the time when we moved in here from Smoky Hollow in 1916, it was what you'd call Old Line. It's an American neighborhood. What we'd call today is WASP, Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Mm-hmm. And of course now it's the neighborhood was opened up when McKinley School was opened up around 1909. And it's the neighborhood, as you can see, is old. It's changed quite a bit. And the number of people aren't they're not as neighborly as they used to be. Of course, that's true of all neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And I belong to the Northside Coalition, Northside Strategy Area, and our purpose now is to try and rehabilitate the neighborhood. The federal government's got a program going where they give low interest loans to people to rehabilitate their property. Mm-hmm. And that's a very good thing. That good many of the neighbors are going along with that, and I think the neighborhood will be revitalized.
Mr. Manning, think back to the time when you were growing up. What was Youngstown like during the Roaring Twenties? Can you describe, as you visualize in your mind, Youngstown during the 1920s?
Yes, Youngstown was at that time it was a steel center. It was the largest. Produced second in steel production. Pittsburgh was first, but Youngstown was called the Ruhr of America. And we had the sheet and tube was the biggest employer, and the Republic Iron and Steel was next. And then we had any number of fabricating plants here, the Truscon Steel on the north side, and we had the General Fireproofing Company, and the commercial shearing was a new plant in 1920. Mm-hmm. And alongside of it, was the block gas and mantle. They used to make gas mantles on Logan Avenue there, and they employed about 400 girls. But then as the electric lights replaced the gas mantle, so that was I think it closed down around 1916 there.
Mm-hmm.
It was a I think it was started around 1907 or 8. A man by the name of Kaufman was the president of it, and of course all we all know now is by reading history books and talk to the people.
Mm-hmm.
This gentleman the other day was saying that 400 girls worked there. Of course, you can see gas mantles was a light work, and naturally wasn't, but Youngstown was nothing at that time, was what they call a heavy industry town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were there a lot of theaters?
Oh yeah, there was plenty of theaters. Youngstown was a very good show town. In 1927, we had there were three theaters had what they call had vaudeville, and it was on a circuit. The Palace Theater, which the RKO, Keith Albee, and then we had the Palace. They had the Park Theater, and we also had the State Theater. Of course, people could go there and. Then another thing at the Park there, a lot of times they had those Broadway musicals would come
mm-hmm.
every so often. They were highly advertised and they got big play.
Mm-hmm.
And then, we had the Stambaugh Auditorium where you'd bring various orchestras and prominent speakers there. During the 20s, I noticed the YMCA had, they would bring prominent speakers there and come in Sunday afternoon. And that's.
Would you say Youngstown in the 20s, during this flapper era, was a bustling town? It was an exciting town?
Youngstown was a very exciting town, yeah. I would say that because we had, at that time, the. Pennsylvania had the blue laws, and there was no shows allowed to be shown on. In Pennsylvania, so they used to come over here to Youngstown, and the theaters and the restaurants and the candy stores and confectionaries and everything did a land office business
mm-hmm.
as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. What were the major department stores at that time?
At that time, it was McKelvey's and Strauss's. They were the two biggest stores in town. Then there was others. Then you had stores on East Federal Street. All of them were owned. Well, in fact, at that time, all the stores were owned by local people.
Mm-hmm.
That was before the chains. If you go into any of those stores on East Federal or West Federal, if you wanted to talk to the owner, you could talk. McKelvey's, Lucius McKelvey was in, and Emery McKelvey was in at the McKelvey Company. And then you go down to Strauss's, Bernard Hirschberg and Isaac Strauss was in their stores in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way with Stambaugh's, Stambaugh Thompson. If you wanted to talk to one of the Thompsons, they were there, and you go up to the Cavanaugh Company. The Cavanaugh men were right on working on the floor, so it was a different in those days. And it's the same way with the stores in East Federal Street. Mose Rosenbaum was down there in his store, and Sam Rosenbaum across the street in their various. Various stores, and Mr. Bonshaff of the Reliable Clothing Company, they were all there. The owners were in the store, and the Har Tailoring, you could talk to all those men in the same way with Rose, the Rose and Son, or Hartzell's at Hartzell's. You always could talk the same way with Lustig's at Lustig's Shoe Store. You could talk to the owners. They were all right on the floor there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, personally, that's the reason we didn't need any consumers' organizations then, because you were actually dealing with the owners then. Today it's a different
mm-hmm.
ball game altogether. You're dealing with these corporations, chain stores that are owned by multinationals, and that's the reason. I'd say that's one of the reasons you need so many consumer union organizations now.
In other words, what you're saying is there was more pride in people's work?
I'd say that was right. The workers took pride in their work, and then furthermore, these merchants, the owners, their stores are family-owned, and when the truck driver brought the merchandise, they'd open it, and if it wasn't good, They say, well, to the driver, take it back. And that was their quality control. And they didn't, that expression wasn't there, but they practiced it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say the people didn't have, those people then knew the market. They knew what they wanted. It was the same way with the in the grocery stores. You were dealing with the owners of the stores.
Were there more corner-type markets?
Oh, much, very much so. All your stores, there was corner groceries all over Youngstown.
Mm-hmm.
And then, furthermore, there were you had the confectionaries too. You had these kids could go in and buy that penny candy in various stores. Just existed for your just to sell candy and magazines and
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And still, they made a living on. Then another thing, you had tailoring shops and bakeries all over the city. Then,
mm-hmm.
And drugstores were there was well everybody. There's plenty of them on the north side, if you want to name. There was down on, there was the Dunkin' Drug at Elliman Rand. Then farther up, you had the one on Scott Street in the 200 block. Then you had another drugstore. Goodman's had a drugstore at Elliman Madison. And then another block away, you had Zimmerman's Parkview Pharmacy. And Goodman's had another drugstore at Elliman Bissell. Then Olin and Yangley had one at Thornton, and then further out they had another, they had the Manita drug. So, and now all that is gone. That was in the 20s. You had drugstores that were all over, and as you could say the same thing about gas stations.
Mm-hmm.
There were plentiful too.
Can you remember any of the corner grocery stores that you went into?
Yes, I had the Waldman store at Kensington and Bissell. I had Dave Goodridge's store at Thornton and Bryson, had the Sackville store at at Elm and Thornton. We also had the Hamiltons, and then you had the Roppel butcher shop. Another thing, speaking of butcher shops, a lot of times there was butcher shops all over the city, and that's all they sold was just meat.
Mm-hmm.
They could make a living at that. And then there was another thing, there was these bakeries that neighborhood bakeries, and of course, you could go in there and buy the but today when you buy a loaf of bread, it just seems all taste the same. Everything seems to be standardized and homogenized now, especially on the bread and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing, in the 20s, farmers used to come in from the come in their horse and wagons. You could see the clay would be on the wheels. You could easily see that they didn't have modern roads like they have today. And they would be selling their wares and even pork and chickens or rabbits or anything you wanted to buy. And they'd churn their own butter and fruits and vegetables. And then of course, milk was delivered to the homes in those days. Now it's a different. They're going out to the supermarkets and buying it now. Of course, there was a large number of dairies were making sometimes 5 and 6 trucks would be delivering milk on the same street. And then finally they all just went out of business. Now you only have, I think, one company in town is delivering milk, and then because most of the people are going to the stores to buy that now.
Mm-hmm. Would these merchants allow you to get provisions and supplies and food on credit?
Oh yeah, very much so. And that was one of the things that was the cause of their downfall, because when the people didn't have any money, they'd go to the corner grocery stores. And then as the chain stores coming in here in the middle 20s, when they would naturally sell the goods, merchandise is cheaper, and then when they had the money, the people would go into the corner, into the chain stores, and finally, the chain stores, you just put the corner grocery out, because the corner groceries were not only giving credit, but they were delivering groceries on top of that. Now, I know one merchant told me, Mr. Smolovitz told me one time, that he'd have people call him up at 11:45 and say, deliver me a loaf of bread and a quart of milk. And he'd have to get in his truck or send one of the employees out to deliver two small items.
Mm-hmm.
And now with the chain stores, there's no such thing as that.
So. Mm-hmm. Mr. Manning, describe as you went into one of these corner markets, describe what you saw as soon as you went inside the door. What was there to see?
Well, some of them, it was different. Like, they had pickles there. They'd be open barrels. And of course, you got that friendly hello there. How are you? How's the family? Or something like that. And the grocer knew everybody. And practically just knew it. But today, it's very impersonal. And then another thing, they didn't have the number of items on the... they didn't carry the items, the thousands of items that they carry today. I remember when I was a kid that they would have sold nutmeg, and you'd have to buy it in bulk and take it home and grind it. Now, if you go into a store, it's already ground for it. Same way with coffee. A lot of them used to have the coffee grinders there, and you could smell that aroma actually promoted the sales. The same way with the pickles and things like that. But now the health department has got laws that everything like that's got to be covered.
Mm-hmm.
So in order, the companies do now is have those pickles in glass jars so as to catch your eye. But there wasn't. But it was a lot better than when you could go in and smell the pickles and different things like that. But you don't have anything. It's all covered up now, which was, I guess it's best the health laws after all, they're on the laws for our protection, on the books for our protection. Things are much better now as far as sanitary-wise. But then you'd see a lot of times they'd open up I remember one time when this one store and they'd have salt mackerel. They'd open up a box, and then it was there if you wanted it. And of course, people would be breathing on it and everything else. You never see that in the store anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Manning, were there a lot of automobiles in Youngstown during the 20s? Were there streetcars? Railroads? Were railroads important in Youngstown during the 20s?
Well, the major mode of transportation in the 20s and early 20s, I would say, would be the streetcar.
Mm-hmm.
The automobiles were just coming into vogue. And from city to city, it was definitely was the railroads.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't drive from here to Detroit or New York. If they did drive from here to New York in an automobile, it was a rarity.
Mm-hmm.
It was a railroad, and then another thing, when the people would go to Cleveland or Pittsburgh or Detroit, the relatives and friends would go down and see them off and buy candy for them and everything else, and fruit and different things, you know, magazines, you know, on their trip. And then when they would come back, it was the same thing. That's why the railroad stations had such large waiting rooms,
mm-hmm.
if you notice.
Mm-hmm.
Now the major, the Erie Terminal was down there at Commerce and Phelps, and then the Baltimore, Ohio was at Mahoning Avenue, just west of Spring Common.
Mm-hmm. Streetcars, you said, were the major...
The major mode of people to get to work. They had the Youngstown Railway here, and then they also had the Southern... cars that went out to down as far as, I think, Negley, Ohio. But anyway, the people from Boardman, a lot of them would come in on that Youngstown. It was the Youngstown and Southern, that was it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were these streetcars connected from city to city? Could you go from Youngstown to, say, Warren on a streetcar?
Yeah, there was. You could go from here to Sharon, too, and Warren and Sharon. And then at one time, they say the publisher of the Vindicator, Mr. Mogg, when he was in the state legislature, that he used to go from here to Columbus on a streetcar, but you'd have to be taking, changing off all the time. It wasn't no direct route. You had to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the early days, a person could go from New York as far as Wisconsin on a streetcar. Providing you have to be a lot of layovers and
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
That's how they had a network of streetcar line. I know when I was in camp, the KSC camp up there in Ravenna, Ohio. We came back on a streetcar from Ravenna.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a streetcar going from here to Salem, Ohio, too.
Did you ever ride a streetcar?
Well, I rode the streetcars regularly, but
how much was the fare?
Well, the fare was at times different. I remember in the 20s there it was around 8 cents. Then it went to 10 cents, and then if you bought a transfer it was a penny. And it was 10 cents for a long time when they had the buses. When the buses replaced the streetcars, it was the bus fare, I know, for a long time was 10 cents.
Mm-hmm. What do you attribute the streetcars being phased out, the mass transportation such as that? Was that a phenomenon that happened after the Second World War?
Well, it started before the First World War. The streetcars were phased out, they claim that a transportation man told me, it was because it was holding up traffic. You couldn't pass up a streetcar. It was just impeding traffic, and that's when, then they put went to the buses.
Mm-hmm.
But then after the most of the men used to go to work, take the buses to work, and then of course the automobile started. Workers, as the income increased, they started buying automobiles, and then after the Second World War, that's when they all switched to automobile. That's when the inner city buses that's what caused the demise of the buses.
Mm-hmm.
Now I hear Berger on that, I have that station, YSU. And Darling, I know their voices are just identical, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Manning. What do you remember about Judge Heffernan in his campaign?
Oh, that's right. Well, he was the first Catholic that was elected mayor. And he was elected. It was a three-way race, and he went out and got the ethnic groups to vote for him. That was the first time that they could say they elected a mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, had there been a two-way race, I don't think Judge Heffernan could have made it.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the other two gentlemen who were running at the time?
A man by the name of Vogan and Art Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Art Williams came in second, and Vogan was third.
Mm-hmm. Now, did Judge Heffernan have any specific platform that you can remember?
No, I don't know of any particular platform. Well, he was an excellent public speaker,
mm-hmm.
and he was one, they claim he was one of the first candidates to make use of the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And he had he was very highly intelligent. He did a lot of reading, and they claim he made a lot of votes by using the radio.
Mm-hmm. The Ku Klux Klan in Youngstown, was it an open organization? Did they hide behind their white sheets? I mean, was it a fashion to belong to the Klan in the 20s?
Well, it was. It was the a lot of them thought that. From what I heard of it and read of it, it was the best thing. You know, it was something to belong to the Klan, and they used to have their parades. They had them parades out there on the Bear's Den Road, and then they had a meeting up at Wick Park one time. They burned a fire and cross up there.
Did you see that?
No, I've talked to fellows that were up there that I didn't actually see it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we saw we went up there the next day and we saw where the cross had fallen and where it burnt the grass, so it was evident, that was quite evident that they were there then, so what we heard was true.
Mm-hmm. Do you know whether any of your neighbors were members of the Klan?
No, no, and as far as I'm concerned, I don't know of any mm-hmm. neighbors that belonged to the Klan, no.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Manning, how did you get involved in the newspaper business? How did you get your start?
Well, I was I delivered the papers, and I used to sell Saturday Evening Post, and then I just, when I was in high school, I needed some extra money, and I just got a job working for the Telegram, that was all.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember the day you got hired, how you just went in and asked for a job? And
no, I was a fellow by the name of Tom Hall. The district manager just wanted us to do some promotion work, and that's what I did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
See, in those days, you had the newspapers were competitors, and they needed, they wanted, you know, trying to get as many subscriptions as they could, see. So they used to give prizes to the boys, take them on different trips, and they just wanted to get that and get as many orders as they could, see.
Mm-hmm.
New subscribers.
So you were in the circulation department?
Yes, always, just in the circulation.
Mm-hmm. What year was that when you...
Oh, I think it was around 1931.
Mm-hmm. During your years with the Telegram and the circulation department, how did the Depression affect, you know, the newspaper business?
Well, it hurt the newspaper business greatly because, see, the newspapers get all their revenue from advertising,
mm-hmm.
and their advertising dropped down. Now, the paper at that time was 18 cents a week. And some people were raising cane, they wanted to know why everything, prices were dropping, wanted to know why the price of the newspaper was dropping. But of course, the newspaper was saying, the publishers would say, well, our most of our revenue comes from advertising, and the advertising is, we're taking an awful beating on that, so in no way could they cut the price of the paper.
Mm-hmm.
Because the 3 cents at that time didn't even pay for the cost of production. They claim at that time it cost 7 cents to print a newspaper. Now, I don't know what it is today, but that's what the publishers would tell us.
Mm-hmm. Where was the Youngstown Telegram located?
At Wood and Phelps Street.
Mm-hmm. What was next to or on the same street as you went to work every day? What businesses were there? Can you remember that?
No. Well, I didn't have to go there. We didn't have to go down there. We just, my job was just going around. People would quit the paper, and we had to go around and find out why. Checking up a lot of times, people would quit because the service wasn't good. Well, we'd go and talk to them and say, well, we'll talk to the newsboy and try and get them to improve the service in order to
mm-hmm.
keep the subscribers.
Mm-hmm. So, actually, you didn't really have an office down there?
No.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I just worked part-time after high school, after school.
Mm-hmm. Now, at that time, there were two major newspapers in Youngstown.
Right.
The Telegram and the Vindicator.
That's right.
What was the Telegram's political affiliation?
That time, it was supposed to have been a Republican paper, generally speaking. People thought it was, although Scripps Howard owned it. But they were independent. They could, you know, took any side.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing is, speaking of newspapers, at that time, the Plain Dealer and the Cleveland Press and all these out-of-town papers came in here, Pittsburgh papers, and they had quite a few readers here, too.
Mm-hmm. Did that hurt the circulation at all, the local papers?
No, I didn't say it was, because people then did more reading than what they're doing today.
Mm-hmm.
And people would buy the Plain Dealer in the morning, and then another thing, a lot of times people would take both papers, the Vindicator and the Telegram. Another thing, if you'd go into a home at night, a man would answer the door, he'd come, he'd have the newspaper in his hand, he was reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Today it's altogether different. They're watching television, see?
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't even get papers anymore.
Mm-hmm. Did the Telegram run in one edition every day, or did they have a city and home edition?
Well, they had an edition in the morning called the noon edition, and then they used to run the Columbiana edition. They had the Trumbull edition, and that one ran off the press around 11:30, and then they had the home edition, and then they used to run the stock edition. People who were interested in stocks, they would they'd call it stocks and sports. The newsboys would go and deliver their regular papers, and then the paper was colored, the stock edition was pink, the front page. And then a lot of people would buy that. And of course, you got to realize that in the 20s, the only way people could get their sports news or all news, it was through the newspaper. That's why the circulation, they depended on the newspaper. Today you can see it as radio and television, and the newspapers have just, I hate to say it, but they've taken a back seat.
Mm-hmm. Going back for just a minute, Mr. Manning, can you remember when the stock market crashed?
Yes, I do, definitely.
What effect did that have on Youngstown? Was there a general panic? Do you remember businesses closing down or banks going
out of business? No, not all of a sudden. The business that hurt first was naturally the stock market. People stayed away from that because they took an awful beating.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I think it was October 30th in 1929 is when they had the crash, things didn't come to a standstill. But then later on, I heard a man who was owned a moving and storage van. I think his name was Fisher. He said they had a lot of merchandise to deliver and machinery, and they got orders to cancel it. And he said he didn't know what happened. Nobody knew. Everybody was stunned. They didn't know what happened. And then they saw that it's just temporarily, and they kept on trying to kid themselves. But then finally, it just kept getting worse and worse. But people were trying to convince themselves that it was just a temporary affair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But now we can look back and look over the figures and everything, and hey, it lasted for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got the historians going around here. The Depression was worldwide. Now they give you reasons why. It started in the early 20s. Some blamed on the war debts, and others blamed on the excessive speculation, which I think that was the cause of it. There was people buying stocks that shouldn't have been buying it. They could buy it for 10 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
I know we had people wanting to buy the stock edition of the paper. They thought they wanted it, but still a lot of them had a hard time paying for their paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, then the banks closed. I think about 2 years later, the local bank. That's really when it hurt, because I know one grocer in our neighborhood said, corner grocer, he said, a lot of people that hadn't been in the store for years could come in because the banks were closed. They didn't have any money to go and shop at the chain stores, so they want him to give them credit.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
You're hearing all kinds of stories like that.
What grocer was that? Do you remember?
No, I don't remember.
Okay. No, that was during the Hoover administration.
Definitely, yes. That was Hoover, yeah.
Now, when FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, came in, were there any NRA projects or WPA projects here in Youngstown?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, very many. Yes, Youngstown had their fair share of them. They had been building roads and doing everything. A lot of the workers from this neighborhood had to go out there and work on the Youngstown Airport out there in.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them were working in Milk Creek Park, and they're working building roads, and they're doing all kinds of work all over the city.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one WPA project is down in Lincoln Avenue. It's the American Legion Home. I think it's that red brick building there, right behind the. It's right, it's 36, I think the number is 36 Spring Street.
Mm-hmm.
Now you mentioned the NRA, well that shortened the hours. I think they had a limit on hours and wages, and I noticed that a lot of the workers liked that because it cut their hours down and they got pay increases.
Mm-hmm.
And when Roosevelt went in, he gave the people new hope. They had something to look forward to, and he straightened out the banks, as we all know, and then that was one thing that got the start. And then as the NRA come in, allowed the workers to organize in these mills, and then the unions started. And
mm-hmm.
Of course, that cut their hours and increased their pay, and of course, that's what they wanted. So.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember listening to Roosevelt's speeches on the
Very
radio?
Much so. And he was an excellent, his radio voice was, as one professor of public speech said, he was the master. He was one of the, he could convince anybody. I don't care who they were. He, mm-hmm. is, nobody could come near him as a, he was the champ, the best.
Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned some of the banks were closing around here. Do you remember any particular bank that
closed?
Oh
yeah,
closed?
The Dollar Bank, the City Trust, and same. In fact, there I think the, yeah they all they were all closed. I understand, except I don't know. Yeah, they were all they had all they were in pretty bad shape. Yeah, the banks closed, and then they opened, but. Another thing, what they were doing at that time was selling, a lot of times people would have bank books and they were selling the bank books. You know, they wanted, if they had $5,000 in the bank, they would go and sell the bank. Some of these people were buying up bank books. And some said low of 20 cents on the dollar, whatever it was, some 10 cents on the dollar. And then, it was pure and legal, so the one that bought the bank book, when the banks opened up, then they got their... Mm-hmm. Got the $5,000.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did the Depression affect your family? Was your father out of work?
Well, he was working part-time. He worked for the city. And well, like everybody, you know, everybody was in the same boat, so you just took it in a matter of strides, see? There was, mm-hmm. There was always somebody that was worse off than we were, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any of the soup lines or bread lines?
Oh yeah, they had a soup line down there at St. Columbus Church at Hazel and the Wood. People would go down, the city maintained a soup. I remember people going in there. Thank God we weren't on the line, but then Olds used to give bread away. He, of course, bread then was 3 loaves for a quarter. If anyone wanted to buy it, they could. It was pretty reasonable, but he was giving free bread away.
Mm-hmm. Olds, you said.
Olds' Market. Yeah, he was a mayor at one time.
Mm-hmm.
George L. Olds.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to the Youngstown Telegram now, who were the largest advertisers?
McKelvey's and Strauss's.
Mm-hmm. Would. The paper solicit advertising?
Oh yeah, they had their own advertising solicitors. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they also used to have classified salesmen too, going around just soliciting classified advertising.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And as I understand it, they had a man that was in charge of theater advertising,
mm-hmm.
and the stores. That was called display advertising.
Was there much competition between the Vindicator and the Telegram for advertising?
Definitely, definitely, yeah, definitely. That's why the newspapers were always trying to get the new subscriptions, so the paper with the largest amount of subscribers would naturally, they were being favored by the advertisers, because it's just like you, if you wanted to put a product on the market or sell something, the paper had, say, 35,000, and your competitor only had 30,000. Naturally, you'd advertise in the paper with the most circulation,
mm-hmm.
get the most coverage.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Vindicator was affiliated with what political party?
Well, the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that had any effect? The political affiliation had any effect on the circulation?
Absolutely. A lot of people would tell us, they'd say, well, we take the Vindicator because of the Democratic paper.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things about the Scripps Howard paper, see, when McClure sold the Telegram, he was a dyed-in-the-wool Republican. But then the Telegram, they had, it was owned by Scripps Howard, it was a chain. 26 papers, the editorials were main editorials were written in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they were favoring the Democrats. Well, what they were doing was alienating a lot of their subscribers here, and they'd quit the paper and take the Vindicator.
Mm-hmm. So, in other words, Scripps Howard wasn't necessarily affiliated with the Republican Party.
No. That's why they were... caused so much trouble here, because most of the Republicans have taken the telegram because it was a Republican paper, and then here they come out one time in 1932 and supported Al Smith for the nomination, and a lot of Republicans quit on account of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, when they supported Roosevelt, that was the boom. I lost any number of subscribers when they supported Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the Vindicator editorials were written locally, and they knew just about what the people would accept. And whereas the telegram, as I said before, was. And then another thing, the big argument against the telegram, what was against it, they called it chain journalism, and they said it was no good, you know, because the editorials were canned editorials, you know, written in New York for the 26 papers.
Mm-hmm.
And which was the truth. Whereas the Vindicator was locally owned, and I could just see it that the Vindicator was getting all, well. See, for if a person would quit the Telegram and take the Vindicator, then that would be actually two subscribers for the Vindicator, because you can see when you lose one, it's just the same way with a politician losing a vote. It goes over, that makes a two vote. That was actually two subscribers for the Vindicator. See.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it was what hurt the telegram was the fact it was chain journalism, and then they were supporting Democrats, especially Roosevelt. They lost any number of subscribers right here on the north side.
Mm-hmm. What impact do you think the two newspapers in Youngstown had on election results?
Well, that's hard to assess. Because sometimes the newspaper would back. I know one time when Mark Moore ran for mayor, both newspapers supported his opponent, Jones, but still Mark Moore won.
Mm-hmm.
And then another time we had a judge here, Judge Mulholland, and the both newspapers supported his opponent, Ford Agee, and Mulholland won.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty hard to, but still a politician always wants newspaper support, but then a lot of times, there was a case right there where Mark Moore won in spite of newspaper opposition, and so did Judge Mulholland win in spite of newspaper opposition.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ed, I'm going to turn this over. Okay, this is the second side of the interview with Edward G. Manning. Okay, Ed, we were talking about the impact the newspapers had on political results. Do you think that people who subscribe to, say, the Telegram or the Vindicator would have been more likely to vote for whoever those papers endorsed?
Yes and no. Now, sometimes people would say, whoever the newspapers are for, I'm against, see? And then others would naturally, but then you have, it's pretty hard to assess something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same way today. Of course, you got to realize in those days, in the 20s, people did go to political meetings. And they paid more attention, there was more activity, but today with this television has changed everything. People want to, they don't want to leave their house now, see. I know when Mark Moore ran for mayor, they had a big meeting, rally up there at Hayes School, and it was packed. Now, whether you could, we're going into a mayoralty campaign now, whether you could get those people to go to a rally like that now, I don't know. It's a question, see.
Mm-hmm.
People, the candidates depend on television. Figure they go right into their home, but you still learn more by going to a political rally. And then you learn much more by reading the newspaper than you do by paying attention to TV.
Mm-hmm.
Much more.
Mm-hmm.
It's your newspaper reporting is much more in depth, and it's, they go into detail and just learn more, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Was there an emphasis on scooping the Vindicator?
Oh, definitely, definitely. That was the That was the main thing a reporter had to know to do, was he wanted to scoop the opposition all the time, get information the other paper didn't get, see? Mm-hmm. But today, with these one newspaper town now, they don't have to do that. Of course, they do, well, there's competition with the, in no way can the newspaper scoop the television, because you got the television giving you live coverage now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the newspaper just has to sit back, and of course, I will say this, the newspaper is still more accurate, because they have more time.
Mm-hmm.
They have more time to check out their facts. See, they're not the newspaper did have it had deadlines, and they had to get in. The reporters say had to get down there by 2 o'clock. You might have had an hour to check his facts, but here the TV is altogether different. You know, of course, it's a different type of interview now. You see the reporters now, TV reporters, talking to these people right coming out of a Board of Education meeting or out of the city hall or out of the courthouse. Well, you're talking to the man that's the thing. Then you can take it for what it's worth, see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then you don't have what you call the reporter's evaluation of the situation, see?
Mm-hmm.
And I still think that I don't know, I like both, but I think the newspaper, I think, yeah, is maybe is better, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that the telegram was more of had a national slant to it. Is that one of the reasons you feel that the telegram began losing its circulation?
Yeah, definitely, because I know for a fact it's just a matter of, well, a matter of record, because they lost good substantial subscribers when they, like when they supported Al Smith and they alienated a lot of their readers. And then later on, when Roosevelt got the nomination, they come out for him. And here these people were all old-line Republicans, and they just didn't like that at all.
Mm-hmm. Were there many women reporters with the telegram?
Yeah, well, the one was Esther Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was a very good reporter,
mm-hmm.
an exceptionally good reporter. Then on top of that, she used to promote, during the Depression, she started that alias Santa Claus Club to raise money to get money for baskets of groceries so the families would have it, you know, for Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that continued on for years, even after she worked for the Vindicator. And yeah, she was very, very good reporter, competent reporter. And then another thing, she knew all the old local families, and she had a nose for news, and she could really write. I'd say she was an exceptionally good reporter.
Mm-hmm. Was there a stigma attached to women reporters at this time?
No, I don't say. So now here I got one thing that you better cut it off now. You want to cut some time.
Okay, Mr. Manning. How did one get from, say, being a man on the street to be a reporter? Was there any kind of a hierarchy you had to follow?
No, from what I know of it, a reporter then started in, and they, as I understand, they used to get so much money for every inch that was published. There was no unions then, see?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the publisher could set the rules. And if they found they had a nose for news, they could just, you know, that's how they learned the, it was on-the-job training, no journalism school. And that's what they would do. They'd go around and write, and then there's something about it. They just had the, if they liked newspaper work, you know, they used to work for the 8-hour day. They didn't know what that was. Like on elections then, they would work, start and work at 6:30 at night when the polls would close, and they'd be working all 3 or 4 o'clock the next morning, and then they expect to be back at 9 o'clock to go to work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there was no unions in those days, and the fellas did it for the love of the work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was a love of the, but then finally the unions got in there and they cut a lot of that, cut those hours down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But now they don't have, on election night, they don't have to stay around like they do, because, you know, with these voting machines now, you know, at 6:30 who's,
mm-hmm.
who's practically elected, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the unions. When the unions came in, were the employees really for that?
I would say yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was, because the pay was low and then the hours were long, and I'd say the unions, yeah, they were, the men voted for it.
Were there any union troubles after the union came in? Any strikes?
No. Well, there was no union in the telegram, only the mechanical unions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the reporters ever joined the union there.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the Vindicator, when the merger, they had a, I think they joined the union then.
Mm-hmm. How much money did you make, Ed?
Oh boy, don't mention that. I was, it was part-time work, and I was making $4 a week, you know, after
mm-hmm.
school.
So mm-hmm.
That's all it was.
And how many hours a day would you work?
Oh, about from about two or three hours, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what was your job? Just
well,
to go around and ask
well,
people?
Well, like what you do is people would put the paper and you had to go around and ask them why and try to talk them into keep on taking it. That was all.
Mm-hmm.
Or then if you got new subscription, I think you just give us 50 cents for a new subscription.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times you see a moving van going down the street, you'd, or moving... A man in front of a house, you'd go up and ask them to take the paper, see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were people pretty receptive to...
Very receptive, yeah. I've always found the people on the north side very receptive where I work, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the way you approach people, you know what I mean? You approach them, a nice gentleman. All salesmen learn to, you know, do that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Who did you report to?
Well, I just had to report to the district manager, that was all.
Mm-hmm. Who was that?
His name was Tom Hall.
Mm-hmm. And did you report down at the telegram?
No, we didn't have to go down there, no.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go down there to pick up a pay or something like that, that was all. We didn't have to report down there.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if many members of the telegram staff were college educated?
I don't know. I know the circulation employees, the full-time workers, I don't think any of them were,
mm-hmm.
no, and I don't know.
Do you think college education was prerequisite for being a reporter?
At that time, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
It would have helped, but I don't think it would have, I don't think it was a prerequisite. Now, I imagine the men in the bookkeeping department, I imagine they were college graduates, they were accountants, like I'd say they were
mm-hmm. Now, were the customers billed weekly, monthly, or yearly?
No, the newspapers were sold to the newsboys, and they used to go around and collect once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just like young merchants, that's what they were called. They had, and the people didn't pay them when they got cut into their profits. So
mm-hmm.
That's what we used to do, is a lot of times a customer would owe the boy money and we'd have to go around and try and get it for him. So.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, that's the way it was. The newsboy went out and he was a merchant selling the papers and he had a,
mm-hmm.
he was responsible.
Was there a lot of people owing money for the papers during the Depression?
Yeah, but then they used to, yeah, that's true. Newsboys did lose a lot of money, yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
right. People owed them, but we used to tell them to cut them off, you know. If a lot of newsboys would feel sorry for the people, you know, they listen to their parents, oh, well, don't cut them off. And yeah, they, a lot of the newsboys lost money, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Would you say more, the circulation was more out in... say the north side or the east side, the west side, or were more papers sold in Youngstown itself on the street corners with the newsboys hawking them?
It's mostly home delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Home delivery, yeah.
Do you remember if there were the newsboys standing on a street corner in Youngstown at all?
Oh, there was downtown. They used to hawk papers downtown. But the bulk of the papers were sold and delivered to the home delivery. That's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Home delivery,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were there any newspaper wars?
Well, it all depends what you mean by a war. They used to, as far as cutting prices, no, but they used to have contests for the kids, you know, take them to Washington and Niagara Falls or the World's Fair in Chicago, and the kids would get out and solicit new subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
Take them to Washington, D.C., and Indianapolis, to the races, auto races down there on Decoration Day or Memorial Day. And that was the, there was always, you know, of course, the newspaper, that cost the publishers money to be, you know,
mm-hmm.
having promotion like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was always a newspaper, you know, trying to beat the other newspaper. Now, a good example is when Irene Schroeder and Glenn Daigh killed a Pennsylvania state trooper. And that was, of course, naturally there was competition, and the newspapers, the Telegram especially, played that up.
Mm-hmm.
And the trial was in Newcastle, and anyway, they electrocuted Irene Schroeder, and a lot of times, Pinchot was the governor of Pennsylvania, and they thought that he would give her a reprieve, and there was no such thing. Well, anyway, what the newspaper, the Telegram, in other words, to everyone, she was going to be electrocuted at 7 o'clock in the morning. So what happened was, the Telegram sent a man down to Harrisburg, where the electrocution took place, and they had an open line from Harrisburg to Youngstown, I think from about 6:30 to 7 o'clock or anyway, and when she was pronounced dead, they signaled the man at the reporter's desk, signaled gave signals to the circulation then to start the selling the papers. And here the papers had been run off the press at 6:30 in the morning. You know, Irene Schroeder died, but they had held the paper up till they made sure
mm-hmm.
that she was dead. They didn't wait for that to come over the teletype. That might have been 5 or 10 minutes later, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But they had that man down, and that's what competition is, see? And then all the kids had the papers under their arms, ready to go, and when that handkerchief was dropped, they all took off, and those cars took off. You think it was like the Indianapolis Speedway, the way those autos all, the cars were in going all over, about 8 or 9 of them, and they were all in, ready to go, and it was just like the Indianapolis Speedway, going out to the north side, uh-huh. south side, and
uh-huh.
all the surrounding towns.
Uh-huh.
So that's the way they worked. So.
How about yellow journalism? Was that practiced by either of the papers?
Well, it all depends on what you call yellow journalism. Now, like the Telegram was always exposing things that went on in the city hall and the courthouse. And there was some trouble at the Mahoning Valley Sanitary District. Well, some people thought that was good journalism, and other people thought it was, you say, yellow journalism. See, mm-hmm. it all depends whose ox is being gored.
Mm-hmm.
And they were after different things in the going on in the city hall. Well, then the Telegram used to lose. City workers would quit the paper, quit the Telegram because they didn't like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people say, "Ah, that's good, boy, printing news like that." See,
mm-hmm.
so it just all depends what you call yellow journalism. See,
mm-hmm.
some people called it the truth and. That was good, and then others didn't like it. So it's just like anything else, just a matter of opinion.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the cars before. Did they have printed on the side like you see today? What they have on the orange Vindicator?
No, no. See, those cars were owned by the district managers, and they got a car allowance, but their name wasn't on the automobile.
Mm-hmm.
It was their personal car, own
mm-hmm.
cars.
Mm-hmm. Did the Vindicator and the Telegram attack one another?
Oh, yeah, in their editorials, yeah, they used to go after one another, yeah, they attacked with one another, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember any special issue that...
Well, I don't, I remember that on the Mahoning Valley Sanitary District, one Telegram took one side and the Vindicator took another, and they were, you know, throwing barbs back and forth, and then again when there was, that was the one thing, and... There was different issues that used to come up when they would take sides, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Telegram was always after lower electric rates, and of course some say the Vindicator stuck up with the high Edison. Well, of course that was just a matter of opinion. But then they were always fighting each other in editorial. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, typical. That was typical of all newspapers all over the country at that time.
Mm-hmm. How much did the Telegram rely on the wire services? What kind of wire services?
Well, they had their own wire. Scripps Howard owned the United Press.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vindicator had the Associated Press.
Mm-hmm. In your opinion, was one service better than the other?
No, I'd say they were both good. They were both good. They both gave good coverage, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Was there a Sunday edition of the Telegram?
No. Years ago there was, but they didn't. That was long. Oh, maybe 70 years ago. It was just a daily paper.
Mm-hmm. Did the Vindicator have a Sunday edition?
Oh yeah, they had a Sunday edition. Yeah.
So they had a monopoly on at least one.
Oh
day.
Yeah. But then there was a lot of Plain Dealer sold here, a lot of New York Times, and a lot of Pittsburgh Press and Sun Telegraphs, and they used to call them the foreign papers then. But I don't know why. But they were just actually out of town papers. But they. A lot of people used to buy the, that's when the people were, would do a lot of reading on Sunday, see?
Mm-hmm.
But today, those days are over, you know, it's not like that today.
Mm-hmm. Did the paper carry legal news?
Legal news. Yeah, but they didn't carry it. Now, if you were a businessman, you would have to buy the daily legal news to get everything, see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the story on that woman who was executed in Pennsylvania. Can you remember any other big stories that the Telegram maybe scooped the Vindicator? Or was that kind of like a common occurrence for each one to scoop the other?
Well, a lot of times other ones, it was an even Steven. A lot of times the Vindicator would probably scoop the Vindicator and... Now I remember during the in the early 20s, people didn't know who won the World Series until the newsboys went down the street hollering Washington Senators won or something like that, see?
Mm-hmm.
They had to depend on the newspapers, see? And because the newsboys went down the street hollering World Series, that created interest. Today, and everybody was talking about the World Series, today you'll have it just piped right into your home and nobody talks about the World Series. You ever notice that today you don't hear anyone talk? Because they already know about it, see?
Mm-hmm.
But then those newsboys actually did stir up. And another thing, they used to stir on a price fight. That's what they would wait for. Like when Tunney and Dempsey fought. Although that was the radio, come on the radio, you got that on the radio, but still people would want to buy the newspaper too to read about it.
Mm-hmm.
Kids would be selling those papers till 9 and 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Okay. Do you know how far the Telegram circulation went? Did people in Sharon buy it? Did people in Warren buy it? Did it go that far?
Yes, it was sold up there, but then it was... the Warren Tribune and the Sharon Herald naturally were then. It's hard to sell an Ohio paper in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
I know they had a branch up there in Warren, the Telegram. They sold a lot of Niles paper. They sold, I think percentage-wise they sold more Niles. And then naturally Girard and Hubbard and Columbiana County was all Telegram and Vindicator even down there.
Mm-hmm. Was Youngstown large enough to support two newspapers?
No, that was the argument was. They said Youngstown in no way, when they called us in the meeting, they said that they couldn't support it. Youngstown could not support it. They said if they had all... See, the Vindicator ended up with more advertising than Telegram. And the circulation manager said if they had all the advertising the Vindicator had, they still couldn't stay in business.
Mm-hmm.
No, Youngstown could not at that time support two papers.
Remember the day that you heard the Telegram was going to fold. Can you remember that day?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't a bit surprised because I could tell the way the circulation was dropping.
Mm-hmm. Did they just call you on the phone?
No, no, we knew about it. It was in the... We didn't have to... We all knew they didn't call you up there. Incidentally, they didn't use the phones then like they do now. My Lance person can't go to a bathroom now. I shouldn't say that.
That's okay.
Ben, can you delete that?
Yeah, we'll take care of that.
That won't be on the record, will it?
Well, we'll just take care of that. Okay. Did you know anybody that, you know, worked down in the office in the telegram? Did you, anybody from the north side here that worked down there that you knew of?
Yeah, there was a man by the name of Todd. He was a political editor. He lived up here in Florenceville. I knew him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what the impact of the telegram being folding had on... the impression I get about the newspaper business is watching these old Humphrey Bogart movies. It seems like it was a really exciting atmosphere inside a newsroom or...
No, well, that was the wrong... And see, the newspaper men have been trying to downplay that. Newspapers don't operate that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's the new movie version of a newspaper is all together wrong. You know, we're running around, and that's the movie version. But no, they don't do that. They're just like any other office, just congenial and walking around trying to do their work right. But a lot of people get the idea that they see those movies and they think they're running around. And mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's not the truth. The newspaper reporters are trying to downplay that Humphrey Bogart and Adolf Menger like front page and...
Yeah.
No, that isn't good.
Mm-hmm. Did the telegram do its own printing? Or did it have its own printing machines?
Oh, yeah, linotype machines, yeah. They had their own linotype machines.
Was there any difference in the size of the columns that the telegram used or the size of the printing?
No, there were...
Used in the Vindicator?
About the same, identical thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people used to say the telegram is easier to read, and others say the Vindicator. So it's a matter of opinion, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about emphasis on photographs or illustrations?
It was about the same. There again, you got people that would swear by the telegram, then other people would stick up for the Vindicator, you know. So mm-hmm. Just what the people get used to, you know.
How about relationship today? Are there more photographs in the paper today than there were back then?
No. There was more then, I'd say. You see, what hits the newspaper today is this television, see?
Mm-hmm.
Now, take the funnies. The kids today don't have to read the funnies. Why? Because they got the movies, they got the cartoons, and they got something which we had to pay for to go to the movies to see years ago, see?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's why the comics, you don't hear the kids talking about comics anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And during the 20s and 30s until television, my lens, kids would be watching Dick Tracy or some Barney Google or some Mutton Jeff or something, the Cats and Jammers kids, but now that's all gone. They forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got all that on the television.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember listening to the Green Hornet or anything like that? Were you
on the radio?
Mm-hmm.
I not very much. I didn't care for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who was the editor of the Telegram while you were working for them?
Well, Felix Bruner, and then later was Lowell Leake.
After the paper folded, what did they do with all the machinery?
Oh, I don't know. Well, a lot of it was, I think, antiquated, because I think when the Vindicator went into the new building, they went and bought new machinery.
Oh, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Explain how the telegram folded. Were they bought out by the Vindicator?
Well, some say it was a merger. I don't know. I heard different stories, and you don't know who to believe, see. But there was the Scripps Howard still owns non-voting stock in it,
mm-hmm.
in the Vindicator.
Mm-hmm.
So some say it was a merger, and some say it was taken over. You don't know. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Now, you went from working for the Telegram to working for the Vindicator. Did that happen just overnight?
Yeah, they hired me, yeah. They raised up a lot of the Telegram workers.
Was that, you think, part of the agreement, maybe?
No, they hired the ones they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said you could give me an estimate of what you thought the circulation was for the telegram before it.
Well, I don't have any. I think it was maybe 24,000.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll find that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, was the Vindicator more widely circulated?
Well, the Vindicator at that time was published their figure on July 2nd. They said they had 43,251.
Mm-hmm.
That's according. They used to print it up in the ear of the left-hand ear of the paper, so mm-hmm. every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the Telegram didn't want to print theirs because it was a way down, see.
Uh-huh. What year did the Telegram go under?
Well, it was July 2nd, 1936 was their last day of publication.
Mm-hmm. So you just immediately went to work for the Vindicator. Was
yeah.
there any difference in your duties? Any?
Well, we had to work Sunday. That was the hard part about it.
Mm-hmm.
We had to work the Sunday paper. See, before it was you have to work 7 days, work 6 days, and then work seven. It's a lot harder, see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you see any different attitude on the way the business was run, or was it run basically the same way?
Basically the same, yeah. Then I had to get circulation, you know, promotion.
Mm-hmm. And you had the same duties that you had
before? Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course, after the Telegram folded, probably not many people were apt to drop their subscription. So was it more your duties getting new subscribers?
Well, see, there was a lot of people taking both papers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then naturally that was circulation there that was that was circulation then that you couldn't count. They only take one paper then instead of taking two. Of course, that actually helped the advertisers because they didn't have to be paying for double coverage, see?
Mm-hmm.
You can just see if you were an advertiser and here you'd be paying for double coverage. This way it was only the Vindicator took over, you're just paying for single coverage, see?
Mm-hmm. What is your opinion on the future of newspapers today?
Well, from what I've read of it, I think they're headed for trouble, and I don't like to see it because the Los Angeles Times made a survey and they found out that the people between the age of 18 and 28 are not reading. They're not buying newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to one news dealer and he told me, he said the same thing here. He says everybody comes up to the newsstand to buy a paper as being that age group between 65 and 80. I said, don't you sell anything to young people? He said, no. Well, and that's what the Los Angeles Times are. Now, in the next 10 years, that's going to be 38 years of age, and they're really worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I noticed the New York Times, they're sending the paper that's sold here in Youngstown is their national edition. It's not the New York edition. It's printed in Chicago. And they've raised the price, and they've cut a lot of cut the sports sections down, and they cut the general news section down. Well, so they've lost circulation as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too bad that the newspapers are going the way they are, because you can get so much information out of it that it helps the college student. I don't care if he's a history student, because after all, it brings you up to date.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get that on the television, see.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it'd be a sad day for the... if anything happens to newspapers in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing about the newspapers, if I want to go back to the Vindicator or the Telegram and find out something happened 50 or 60 years ago, I can do that. But what can you do with the television station? You can't go to any television station and say, hey, I'd like to see your old reels. Now you can go down to the Youngstamog Library. I think the New York Times goes back to 1851. And I got it over there, the London Times, you can go back to, I don't know, 1768 or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I have the figures there, I could print it out. And then you can, but you can't do that with television news, see, or radio.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I say that I hope the newspapers, I don't want to see them, anything happen to them, because it would be a sad day in this country if anything happens to the newspapers.
Okay, I'd like to thank you for this interview.
Well, I thank you for coming here. I enjoyed it.